I will call the meeting to order. We don't yet have a quorum, so we can't do the minutes yet, but we will start right out with Bob Meyer and Marty Vadas to give us a presentation on the Permanent School Trust Fund. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And some of us who are on this committee before already had this, but for those who are new, it will be the first time that you have seen it. And for me, even though I saw it last time, it will be useful again. We have two bills from Representative Dietrich, and one of them just was introduced this morning. And we don't really like to do bills that aren't introduced so we can put them on the schedule. But we thought since people are interested in one bill, that they would be the same people, and at least instead of having you come back a second time. But we are going to lay over both bills. So if there's anything that comes up, or, you know, we're not even going to decide where we're going to send the second bill until later when we have some discussions with the Speaker and Representative Guineas. So you have time, in other words, to deal with that second bill in discussion. But we want to get it on the table today and hear about it, and didn't want to have you come back a second time. So, welcome, and Mr. Meyer, are you the one starting?
Madam Chair, yes, and briefly, I'm just going to update the committee on the activities of the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee that was amended last session. The council was appointed. We did seek input from both the Speaker of the House, Minority Leader, Majority Leader in the Senate, and the Minority Leader in the Senate. The appointments were made. There was a meeting that was held the beginning of December. There were several subcommittees that were established, focusing around trust fund land accelerations, dealing with the BWCA, dealing with some of the emerging issues such as renewable energy issues and how we should be looking to take advantage of those things, and also land management, land exchanges, and things like that. We're in the process of working with those subgroups and the committee members to come up with some recommendations. Unfortunately, there hasn't been as much interest as we had hoped, so we're kind of taking the crop in hand and going to spur these committees along with some round-robin type discussions. We're going to be sending out some suggestions for them to look at, some ideas in the area of renewable energy. For example, one that's coming up is wind leases on school trust land. How should those be charged, by the acre or by the megawatt? Things of those things that I think we need some direction from the legislature on to help us move forward on that. The area of land exchanges with the federal government is one that a lot of members are interested in, so we're looking for some legislative leadership that we've talked with are interested in sending a letter to the federal delegation to help deal with those exchanges, particularly with the 85,000 acres of trust land in the Boundary Waters Canoe area. Our focus is on that. We spoke with Senator Stumpf just last week about that. He's very interested in helping get a letter with you folks signed and sent out to the delegation on that. And there was some discussion about having a tour in June. I don't know where we'll be in June, and I don't know where the budget will be to have a tour. Maybe we'll have a camping expedition up on some school trust land or something like that. But we do want to get folks out and talk about and see some of the issues that are out there, in particular the relationship to mining, forestry, school trust management activities. But we are taking our activities very seriously, Madam Chair. You'll see in our land sales bill that was just introduced today by Representative Bill. We're seeking authorization for some shoreland pieces of school trust land. We aren't going to probably sell those right now just because it's not the best time to be selling land. But we're seeking the authorization from the legislature to sell these lots of land once the economy turns around, the market gets better, so then those revenues would go back into the school trust fund. So in a nutshell, that's where we are. Stay tuned. We're going to be communicating with you often on those issues. We do appreciate the interest, but it still remains a top priority for us in managing those lands for the fiduciary responsibilities. Just on the two bills that you have before you today, I know the first one, Senate file, is it 106, I believe? 104, I'm sorry. That's dealing with the changes that were made last session, I believe, taking those funds that will be coming off of the Permanent School Trust Fund and putting them into a designated source. The other one, 780, certainly is worth discussion. I can give you some round numbers that would need to be filled in on the bottom there, those appropriations, and looking at the fund statement. $3 million would be needed from the general fund to deal with the, well, maybe it's not $3 million because they don't do with the university fund lands, but on the forestry side of it, it was about $4.5 million were our costs for forest management on permanent school trust fund lands last fiscal year. So that's the one piece. You know, it's good discussion to have about how do you, should those costs be taken away from management of school trust fund lands and paid for by the general fund? But our forestry budget right now is facing a $5 million reduction in 05 and $6 million reduction in 06 from the receipts off of state-owned lands in the forest management investment account. And the governor's budget does contain a $2 million general fund appropriation each year to help shore up those activities. So just to give you some of those numbers as you're discussing that, maybe the questions might come up. But we can get you more information on those in the coming days as well, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Meyer. And now it's Mr. Vadas.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Marty Vadas, and I'm the Director of the Lands and Minerals Division for the Department of Natural Resources. And I do have a brief presentation here. I'll try to make it brief. Starting out with a little background information on the school trust lands and how they came into state ownership and what the intended use of those lands are. And also talk about the revenue generated from those lands, focusing on the last year or so, what that's meant for the school trust fund. This first slide is similar to the map that we have here in the front. This map shows the school trust lands from various federal grants. And there are three grants from the federal government that came to Minnesota in support of K-12 education in the state. All of those separate grants were combined a few years ago, 1974, where the proceeds go into the permanent school fund. And so these permanent school lands generate income that goes into that fund. The three separate grants are school grants, and I have some statistics a little later on. That was the original grant from the federal government. And along with that, you'll see in that index there is something called indemnity lands. And those are lands that were substitute lands if Section 16 and 36 were already out of federal ownership. So that was sort of the basic criteria. Section 13 and 16 and 36 of every township was supposed to go to the school trust fund. Indemnity lands were those substitute lands for those lands were already sold or not available. There's another grant called the Swamp Grant, and that was a federal grant for the purpose of supporting the development of Minnesota, specifically for developing wetland areas. So the proceeds from the sale of those lands were supposed to be used for ditching and draining and making portions of Minnesota agricultural, and that was the purpose of that grant. And the third grant was internal improvement. And the purpose of that was to support the development of state lands, development of state infrastructure. And if you turn to the next page, the next slide, this shows the amount of original acres that were granted and the amount of acres owned today. It's as of 2007, but generally it's the same. So as you can see, originally there was about 2.9 million acres of school land. Today there's just under a million remaining that have not been sold. Swamp land of 4.7 and 1.5 now. So in total, original grant was about 8.1 million, and what remains today in state ownership is about 2.5 million acres. And in addition to that, there's about 1 million acres of severed mineral rights, where the surface has been sold, but the minerals have been reserved for the school trust. And of all the remaining lands, about 60% are in wetlands, and those are mostly from the original swamp grant. This is the statutory direction on management of the school trust fund, and the goal is to secure the maximum long-term economic return from the school trust lands consistent with the fiduciary responsibilities imposed by the trust relationship. I know you know how to read, but it's an important point for us, and that's the direction the legislature has set for how these lands should be managed and what they are in state ownership for. And Minnesota agreed to that when Minnesota accepted these lands from the federal government. The statute also goes on to say, with sound natural resource conservation and management principles, and with other specific policy set in state law. So, this is kind of a compilation of the overall growth in net royalty or net income from these lands over the last few years. This is a little complicated, but what we have here is stacked on the bottom. That black bars show the income from land sales where school trust land has been sold. And I should tell you that it's not been our preferred thing to sell the land. We believe it's better to retain the ownership in most every case and generate revenue from that land on in the future. But there are some parcels where it appears there's limited revenue generation, and it just makes the most sense to put those up at public sale. And what we have for each fiscal year is what the gross revenue is, and that's the bar on the left, and what the net revenue is, and that's the bar on the right. The next one, the red set of bars, is from mineral leasing, and so that's royalty and rental income off school trust lands. And as you can see, in fiscal 05 and before that, they're virtually the same, and that's because the management cost for these lands was paid for from the general fund. There was a change in fiscal 06 where management cost comes from the mineral revenues, and I'll talk a bit more about that on how that's set up. I know that's the focus of one of the bills that we have before you. And the last one is the forestry revenue, and that's from forestry and real estate leasing. And that then shows the gross revenue and the net revenue from those activities year on year. The revenue that goes to the corpus of the permanent school fund is from these sources. Mineral leases, less the portion deposited in the mineral management account, and I have a couple of slides on that. Land sales, forest campground fees, wild rice leases, and standing timber from land sale parcels, and the net revenue from the forestry expense account. And just to point out, once that income has been generated, it goes into the corpus of that fund, and the State Board of Investment manages that account to generate the interest revenue off of it that's distributed. So DNR's...
Before we go on, we had one question, Representative Depke.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm new to this, and so this is the first time I'm really looking at the school trust, so I'm one of the new people that Chairman Greiling was talking about. When did Minnesota accept the land trust from the federal government, and why was the federal government allowing us to do this, or were they doing this nationwide, or do you mind if I digress a little bit? Thank you, ma'am.
Go right ahead. Mr. Vedas.
Madam Chair, members, couple of things that we have put together. This is a sort of a complete guide to how all these lands came into state ownership. And it's available on the DNR website. And also, I think we have for you a biennial report that gives a lot of this information. But I think the short answer is 1867 was the first grant, and that was in the Enabling Act that set up Minnesota as a state. And 1860 was the swamp land grant, and 1866 was the internal improvement grant. So these lands have been in state ownership for a very long time, since statehood. And this was common practice on the part of the federal government when each state became a state, is to dedicate a certain portion of lands for these purposes. So this opportunity was offered to all states, and all of them accepted it. All of the eastern states have sold all of their trust land decades, a century ago. Very few eastern states have met much, if any, school trust land left. Minnesota is more like a western state, where we still continue to retain some ownership and generate income from that. And so, there are many of the eastern states sold the land, put it into a fund, and then they spent the fund. And so they have absolutely nothing left of that original land grant that the state received.
Griffin Dipke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we still have a fund? I mean, do we still have a balance, and how is the money used, or is that what you're going to explain to us today? Or?
There is a fund. I think the current figure is probably changed because of the market, as of a few months ago, it was about $700 million that was in that fund. And the State Board of Investment, the same group that invests pension funds and so forth on behalf of the state that manages that fund and does the investment to generate the income. And the income in the last few years has been on the order of $22 to $30 million that's been available from the income from that fund.
And Representative Dipke, just last session, up until last session, that $22 to $30 million or so was going into the general fund, even though, you know, we on this committee thought the Constitution said it should go to education. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it had gone to education at one point, but then it needed to go to the general fund maybe in a year like this when there's a deficit. And so we got it, through Representative Dietrich's legislation last year, got it, stopped it going into the general fund, redirected it into education. And in the House, we had dedicated that new money to technology. The PS Minnesota wanted a dedicated source of funding for technology, and we did not put it into the new Minnesota Miracle because we had thought this money would be that dedicated source, and also thinking that the money would be increasing because of the mineral development, you know, not thinking about the economy of the investment. And but the Senate and the governor thought it should be flexible money, and they did not accept that proposal. So that's why we now have, in the new Minnesota Miracle, $50 per pupil for technology. If we could actually pass this, we could take that out, and then this would be the dedicated source for technology. So that's the first bill that Representative Dietrich is proposing. And then her second bill is dealing with the fact that we're always concerned about how much is skimmed off the top of the money for the school children that goes to management in the DNR. And, you know, in the case of forestry, it's almost a wash, it seems. We don't get much money out of it at all, but the mineral fund, we do. And so that's my question then for on page 6 for Mr. Vadas. How much of the mineral lease is taken for the management in DNR before? At what percentage would you say?
Madam Chair, the next few slides, I think, give the answer.
Okay, proceed then. Thank you.
Next slide then does show the growth in net mineral revenue for of the last few fiscal years. And I think the short answer is, except for a couple of anomalies, like in fiscal 2002, where some mineral revenue was used for plant demonstrations at taconite plants. It was dedicated for that purpose. Mineral management has always been funded by the general fund. The change to that came in fiscal 2006, where, as you may recall, there was another budget shortfall at the time, and there was a proposal for a two-year period to take the management costs, which are about a little under $3 million a year, out of the proceeds from the mineral leases. And so that was passed with the idea that it would only be for 2 years. In fiscal 08, the current biennium we're in, the governor's budget had a proposal to continue the funding of the mineral costs out of mineral royalties for 1 year, and then go back to the general fund in the second year, which would be this fiscal year. And the result of the last legislative session is that the mineral management account was made permanent. And so the history is it's been for since about 1890 funded out of the general fund. That was changed in fiscal 06. And so this gives you an idea of the level of income to the permanent school trust fund and both the growth in the net from minerals. The next slide, a couple of slides here on the mineral management account, and it's a little complicated, but I'll try to explain it. It's set up so that 20% of the income generated from mining mineral leases goes into the mineral management account, The remainder is immediately distributed to the funds. So 20% goes to this mineral management account, 80% immediately is distributed to the corpus of the permanent school fund. The legislature then appropriates money for the from the mineral management account for DNR to manage the activities. The mineral management account was created to have a $3 million principal to be drawn down in the event that future income generation drops. And that contingency amount, that $3 million, was very quickly funded because mineral income is up. And so that happened in fiscal 2007. So how it works then is at the end of each fiscal year, the amount in the mineral management account that exceeds that $3 million is distributed to the school and university trust fund in a proportional basis based on how much income those lands generated. And so the net result of all of that is that first fiscal year, 20% went to the mineral management account, and fiscal 07, 9.3, and during fiscal 07, that first $3 million was funded. And so the cost in fiscal 08 is just the management cost that DNR spends on this land, and that was 8.4% of the income. This graph shows you really for the mineral receipts from all classes of land, and a couple of other things on here. So the pink bars on here are the school trust fund land. And also on here is university trust and tax forfeit, which are the kind of the major sources of mineral income by land class. But also what's shown on here is the amount of the minerals management for generating this income. And as you can see, there was that change in fiscal 06 where it went from the general fund before that to a portion of the income supporting that activity. And I guess I just point out, if you look at, say, 1999 or 2000, the amount that's being spent today is, in real dollars, less than what was being spent at that period of time for that purpose. Next one. And just to give you some historical perspective on what's happening, this is the amount of iron ore and taconite income from 1890 till today. And the iron ore taconite income represents probably 98-99% of the mineral income. The other is from peat or from non-ferrous, which I'll talk about a little bit later. There's not, at this point, there's no royalty income, only rental income from the non-ferrous. And as you can see, the last few years, there's been a substantial increase in the amount of income. And this is also set up by funds. So the blue bars, the ones on the bottom, are the school trust fund income. And it was mentioned about the potential of some other mineral development for the school trust fund. Excuse me. And this map shows an area of northeastern Minnesota. You can see that inset map called the Duluth Complex. And this area has some very large copper, nickel, platinum deposits that have been explored for many years, but there's a current increase in the amount of exploration and interest. One of these deposits, the polymet deposit, currently there's a request to receive permits to start the development of that. There are some other deposits, one, the Birch Lake by Franconia Minerals, the Comus deposit by Duluth Metals.
Mr. Vadas,
yes.
I think we're going to have to not have quite so much detail because Representative Dietrich has a ton of testifiers, and I think for this committee we could get the highlights. Would be good.
I'll
and then we do have two questions, questioners on the list.
Okay. I guess the point of this is we calculated about a year ago that the potential income to the school trust is about $1.4 billion from this activity. And this is the amount of exploration drilling that's been done in the last few years. The next slide lists the revenue generated from land sales. And you will notice that the previous years we put parcels up and they sold. Last couple of years, not so. Market's not so good for selling land, so we're not planning on putting much up for sale in the near future. Forest management. Revenue from timber sales, real estate leases and licenses go into forestry suspense account. Costs are certified against that account, and allowable costs are things like protection, improvement, administration, management. Next slide. General fund is reimbursed for protection and administrative costs, and by protection that means firefighting costs. And the net of all of that goes into the corpus of the school trust fund. And the next one just lists examples of what protection, administration, management, forest roads, and improvement. Those are the examples of the kinds of allowable costs that are certified against the income. This slide shows for forestry revenues what the gross and the net revenues have been for the last few fiscal years. So the difference then is the cost that Division of Forestry certifies against their management activity here. Trust management on forests. There's about 2.2 million acres of trust land managed by the Division of Forestry. Of that, about 1.5 million is capable of producing commercial timber. About 29,000 acres is reserved from harvest, and that would be things like old growth. And about 18,000 acres are harvested a year, which is less than 1% of the total acreage. And a little bit about what we've been doing lately. I mentioned land sales. We do plan on offering a handful of parcels this spring, and we have not decreased the value of those parcels, and we'll see if they sell. Land exchanges, we have, I think I mentioned before, exchanged all school trust land out of state parks, and we're moving on with exchanging lands that can't generate revenue for other state lands. We're looking at wind power leasing, as Commissioner Meyer mentioned. We just finished a railroad lease for Esser Steel in Itasca County, and part of that lease they agreed to pay $750,000 for encumbering some taconite resource with the rail line. We have been very aggressive at identifying aggregate resources on trust land to generate income from that. We just held a metallic mineral lease sale in January, and another 3,500 acres of school trust land is now going to be under lease after the March 11th Executive Council meeting. Timber revenue enhancement. There is a group in the Division of Forestry that's focusing on ways to increase the timber revenue and decrease their costs. And we are continuing with the normal things, utility licenses and road easements, that sort of thing on trust land. And we have been very busy negotiating mineral leases on trust land. As you can see from the exploration activity, there's a lot of interest in exploring Minnesota for other mineral deposits, and that includes trust land. And that, Madam Chair, is my last slide.
Thank you, Mr. Bates. Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to make a preemptive strike here and then ask a question of Mr. Vadas. My preemptive strike is as follows. When you look at that map of northeastern Minnesota, the first thing you should conclude is that literally half, if not more than half, is non-taxable public property owned by the federal government, the state government, and county government. Secondly, northeastern Minnesota has three economies: timber, minerals, and tourism. That's all we have. Timber, mining, and tourism. It's no accident that Mr. Vadas, working at the Department of Natural Resources, has responsibility for the public's interest in managing two of those three sectors. minerals, and timber. And he has to do it in the public interest. Now the question, there will be many. At the present time, Mr. Vadis is managing this in the public interest by utilizing a portion of the proceeds from the permanent school trust fund. Period. If we were in this legislative session, of all legislative sessions, to risk removing the department's access to that fund and put all of our eggs in the basket of a general fund appropriation to the department to do this management, I think is really a tough sell, and a sell that is extremely risky and would have the impact of severely crippling those two of our three sectors of our economy. So, Mr. Vadis, what is the department's position on the thrust of all of this, which would be to eliminate your funding stream and instead get a general fund appropriation so that you can perform the tasks that you perform in the public's interest?
Mr. Vadis.
Madam Chair, Representative Van Zelst, this has come up ever since there was a dedication of a portion of the income, and you know, my answer has been and continues to be that I know what it takes to manage mineral resources on the 3.5 million acres, what it is that needs to be done, and I can explain why it's important and how the state of Minnesota and the people benefit from that. I don't know how that could be paid for. I think that that's a policy question that really is not appropriate for me to try to answer. I know what work needs to be done, and I can explain to you what it is, and in minerals in particular, there are tremendous opportunities on the horizon for increased revenue for the school trust fund. And these are long-term activities to go from you know, mineral potential to have a lease where you get adequately compensated for the mining of those minerals, and then the reclamation, and it's a very long-term endeavor, and I don't know what the appropriate place is to pay for that. As I mentioned, for 100 plus years it was from the general fund, and that has changed, and it's a difficult place.
And he's kind of stuck because the governor recommended that they go back to the general fund.
May I try a slightly different text? In your professional judgment, does this appear to be a little risky to you?
Mr. Data.
Madam Chair, Representative himself, I'm generally a very conservative person.
So am I.
It's a concern that I think my feedback is no one complains that the work has to be done. It always comes down to then how should that be supported? And I tell you, you know, my 35 years of experience doing this says that this just doesn't happen by itself. You don't generate this income without a concerted effort by some professional people looking out for the state's interest in it.
I think we all agree it has to be paid for. The question we're trying to decide is, does it come from the school children or the general fund, whether it's trustworthy or not? And so I think it's legitimate, and it's not. I don't think you can answer it. So thank you for trying, though. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am so grateful that we have this pristine, beautiful part of our state. I have a question about the relationship of PolyMet Mines with the DNR. I've had some environmentalists come into my office over the last few weeks. I don't understand mining. It's not part of my culture, but there is a new technique in mining that they're using to get at some different kinds of minerals to extract them that is creating a sulfur runoff into the rivers that could eventually contaminate the Boundary Waters Canoe area. And I am representing the apoplastic over there right now. I'm sorry. But I'm curious about what is the relationship that you have with these mining companies that are doing that type of extraction, and does that affect our school trust?
Mr. Vedas.
Madam Chair, PolyMed, as I mentioned, they're in the middle of environmental review and have requested permits to begin mining. And the kind of deposit that they're looking at is much different than the iron ore and taconite that we've seen before. And there are sulfur-based minerals involved with that. And there are have been some real issues with that kind of mining different places around the world in the past. No question about it. DNR's relationship is that we have the permit to mine. So we regulate that type of mining activity and would be the group that would work within the laws and the rules to put permit conditions on that would be aimed at controlling those sorts of very real issues that have happened other places.
Can you go back to slide number 19, page 19?
Sure.
And this one kind of illustrates the problem. If you look at how much the DNR gets in the, how much gross revenue there is, and then in 2008 the DNR gets of the 12 about 8, and then there's 4 left for the school children. And members, you can see that in other years it wasn't, there wasn't such a disparity. So it's this sort of a chart that brings Representative Dietrich to her legislation. And could you tell us, Mr. Vedas, if you think that, do you have any idea if that sort of wide gap between what the schools get and what the DNR gets is going to widen, or do you have any predictions on that?
Madam Chair, this is the forestry revenue,
and your mineral.
I'm most familiar with minerals. Some of the forestry would probably be better equipped.
Is Mr. Meyer still here? There he is. We'll ask him, because you're Ms. Lewis is minerals. We have Paul Pojar, whose lands and minerals, but we're wanting to ask about forestry. Mr. Myers, do you know the answer to that one?
Madam Chair, I just briefly heard the end of your question. Could you repeat it for me?
We're just wondering if the chart that we're looking at up there on page 19, that huge $8 million gap between, with the DNR getting two-thirds of the money that used to go to the school children and the children get one-third, it used to be closer, and only the difference of maybe four, you know, half, there used to be a smaller difference. Is it going to continue on like that?
Madam Chair, members, and actually I've been on the phone ever since I was up here trying to get some more information on the certification costs that are out there. It should get closer. What part of the problems we're seeing is 2 years ago there was some legislation passed that allowed loggers who had contracts to turn back their sales of the auction. We need to come back and spend some more time on how timber is put up for sale and how the auctions occur and how our costs are certified. But in the short term, a person was able to purchase wood. There was a bill passed by the legislature 2 years ago that allowed them to turn those sales back to the state of Minnesota, which created a little bit of a gap. But the downturn in the timber industry has brought those revenues down, as well as the end price. The market price for timber has been decreasing our costs, in all practical terms, increased because of insurance, things of those. Our workforce, our costs for forestry are typically what we talk about is boots in the woods, marking timber for sale, doing thinning. There are actually people out in the woods doing forestry-related activities. So it is our goal to reduce those costs wherever possible and bring that net and the gross more closer together so there are more revenues going into the trust fund, Madam Chair. But I can't tell you for sure what those numbers will be or where that's going, but we would love to have a more in-depth conversation with the committee about forest management and forestry costs as soon as possible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Dietrich.
Ready?
Mm-hmm. Thank you all very much. Representative Garofalo.
Quick question, and I don't know the answer to this question.
Oh, my.
It just dawned on me. I was trying to figure out why I didn't know the governor's budget recommendations with regard to this area. And then it dawned on me because it's not in the education bill. That's why I don't know it. Do you know what the minerals fund and the forestry fund? What are they proposed for the upcoming biennium?
Representative Garofalo, you mean in the Environmental Finance Committee, or in the, you know, last year, as you know, last biennium, the governor recommended that that you end having the management costs for the minerals come out of the school trust fund. It was the legislature that did not accept that recommendation, but that was the governor's recommendation. I'm not aware of any recommendations for this year.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo,
there is no risk.
The $3 million fund is there, and that's supposed to be, the proceeds from that are paying those costs now, right? There's no new funds coming out in the mineral section?
Representative Garofalo, Mr. Crow is pointing us to page 10 in the handout that we just looked at.
But...
And members, while we're, oh, here it is, on page 10, Representative Garofalo.
Right, but Madam Chair, I thought that those were, that was taken from that $3 million fund. It's not new. It's not new. I'm sorry, shaking his head at me. I didn't think that was, we were still taking money out and putting it into the minerals account, that now that we were at $3 million, we were done, the proceeds from that $3 million fund were paying the management. Maybe someone could just clarify that for us.
Mr. Crump.
$3 million is basically a reserve fund. So there's up to 20% taken out of that $3 million. And so then there's continued. So then each year the DNR takes out an amount that above the $3 million that it costs to manage the minerals. And you look on the slide on page 10, you see they were taking, and they can take up to 20%. So in fiscal 06, they were taking 20%. And then in 7 and 8, they're at about 9 and 8%.
So that one at least has a good trend line. Members, that in answer to Representative Depke's question, staff has gotten us a very nice chart that has just been passed around that everybody should have with the permanent school fund information. I guess we'll go back and do the minutes, if that's all right, for just a second. Representative Folkham, would you move the minutes of February 11th?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Folkham moves the minutes of February 11th. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Welcome, Representative Dietrich, and would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 104 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Education Finance Bill.
Representative Dietrich moves House File 104 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, before we get started, I would like to take this opportunity to thank the work group on the school trust lands. And those were my colleagues, Representative Demmer and Representative Swells. Once again, it was a pleasure to have people work on this issue with me, and I appreciate that. And then to the bill, House File 104. This requires the permanent school trust fund revenue to be set aside for purposes of technology as outlined on lines 9 through 16 on page 1 of the bill. The reason for dedicating school trust lands revenue to technology, I believe, is the right thing to do for several reasons. First of all, it is time to act on the suggestions of Howard Vicker, Executive Director of the State Board of Investment, when he recommended in 1988 that we envision the permanent school fund supporting projects like investment in computers or a source of financing for a district's needs that bring their schools up to code, or many other worthy projects that have direct benefit to school districts, school children in school districts. And his philosophy was that it should be something something you can touch, something you can see. And the reason is directing money to something like technology would increase the visibility and subsequently, I'm not going to get that one out today, that it would increase the accountability and oversight of the school trust lands and the school trust lands fund account. Second of all, I strongly support this is because I think that dedication to technology would complete the new Minnesota miracle. This would provide the needed money in that bill for technology, and that is what many of our school districts have been asking for quite some time, is a dedicated, long-term, stable funding source for technology, and which is what the original PS Minnesota report called for. Third of all, as I think that this bill responds to the needs of 21st century schools. Technology is as basic as notebook, pencils, and the whole long list of other supplies that we use in classrooms today. And a long-term stable funding source for technology is needed to help our schools meet the needs of educating students in the 21st century. And Madam Chair, as long as you have pointed this out, we have many testifiers here tonight today. So I am going to go ahead and call on Ms. Schaefer.
Welcome.
And she is from the Oakdale Junior High School, Oakland Junior High.
Sorry about that. Thank you. Welcome, and our procedure is that all testifiers restate their name and their title for the case.
My name is Ann Schaefer, and I'm here to testify in support of House File 104. I am a ninth grade English teacher at Oakland Junior High in the Stillwater Area Schools. And over the past 38 years, my job has changed. When I began teaching in 1971, technology was my typewriter and the Doodle machine that made purple handouts for students. Technology today at Oakland means a one-to-one laptop program where all students and staff have laptops 24/7. Learning assignments and teachers are accessible 24/7. What does this mean for students? Students have become pilots, not passengers, in my classroom. Learning goes beyond the school day. The Shakespeare unit that I used to teach was a lecture on William Shakespeare and his times, where students took notes and listened to me, the sage on the stage. Then we read Romeo and Juliet aloud in class. Well, now my students find the information themselves with the guide on the side and share that information in small groups. They make presentations with their laptops to share information in way of a keynote, a movie, an inspiration web, software that they know and choose to use. They take a virtual tour of the Globe Theater. They see clips of live performances of the play. They have access to all 150 sonnets and all 37 of the plays on their laptops. Students are talking to each other and teaching each other. They retain much more information. And yes, we still read the play aloud. My students used to write a research paper after 2 weeks in the media center doing nothing but taking notes. That research project has changed. With the laptops, my students choose a topic to research and create a 2009 calendar on this topic with pictures, information, dates, quotes, vocabulary, a full bibliography. Everything is done on the laptop. Very little class time is needed to be dedicated to the project. Students could work on it at any time, whether it's sitting in the halls before school in the morning, at home, at Caribou, on the plane. Students could work on it any time, and they're very proud of their finished product. Many of the calendars look like professional publications. The diversity in a classroom requires a teacher to address the needs of all students. And with classroom sizes growing, it's a difficult task. Students behind grade level, at grade level, ahead of grade level. The laptop allows me to accommodate them all. I can easily modify an assignment, and everyone is meeting the same outcomes and state standards, federal standards, by doing different tasks that allow them to be successful as well as challenged.
Ms. Schaefer, I don't know how much more time you have, but we need to finish all the testimony, and there are four more people after you by 5-2 in order to get the next hearing in and all the other testifiers. So that means you've got 1 minute left.
Okay.
So advanced learners do not have to wait for the rest of the class to master something. They get on an interactive program on their laptops. They can move at their own pace. I get scores. I get information about where they are. Nobody knows what their classmate is doing because they're all working on their own laptop. So I get through twice as much information. I don't have to worry about outdated textbooks. I have the World Wide Web. It's updated continuously. And yes, we still read books.
But we're not dependent on what the district owns. As for me, my communication with parents and other staff is quick, right at my fingertips. Kids know their grades at all times. They know about missing assignments. So do their parents. They know about lesson plans. It's all online. I don't have to waste time in class taking care of that. Classroom management is not an issue. They're focused. They're motivated. They stay on task. I can communicate with a teacher in China. My students can talk to students in Paris. So if you're familiar with the Stillwater area schools, you might ask, why don't all three of the secondary schools in the district have one-to-one technology programs? There is no consistent, sustainable funding. Education has moved from a read-only culture to a read-write. Every school should have access to technology. Ms. Dietrich's bill is important. The reality is that technology is not the future, it is the present. And education needs to change to meet the needs of the present. We do not expect our students to live in the past, so educators cannot be effective using the tools of the past.
Thank you very, very much. Mr. Plant.
Madam Chair, members of the K-12 Education Finance Division, my name is Patrick Plant, Chief Technology and Information Officer for North Hennepin School District. And today I'm also representing a memo of the State Technology and Media Organization, as well as I'm a member of MET, which is the Minnesota Educational Technology Task Force. And we very much appreciate Representative Dietrich's leadership on this important issue in bringing this bill forward. The bill, House File 104, addresses the progressively more urgent unmet need of funding school district and school and classroom technology, hardware, software, and higher bandwidth networks. The unstable, inconsistent nature of technology funding for K-12 education in Minnesota has made effective planning and delivery of today's learning opportunities for students extremely difficult and inequitable. Along with this bill, there's a great need to adopt the state vision and policy framework that supports information, communication, and technology literacy for our students and modernizes our schools and classrooms to be 21st century learning environments. It's increasingly alarming for the state of Minnesota that we have come so close to the end of the first decade of the 21st century, and we yet have no plan in place to address these needs, and thus, as you've just heard, have isolated instances of success. Now, before I turn it over to the other presenters, I'll mention just a couple of resources. In your packet was a handout courtesy of the Partnership for 21st Century Learning, which is a broad public and private sector partnership. And on their website, you'll find numerous valuable resources on this topic. But just on this one alone, it lays out, basically, besides the core subject areas, the new themes and subject areas that students need to be fluent in, like entrepreneurial literacy and global awareness. And on the back, you'll see referenced things like the information and communication technology skills students have to be prepared for the workforce or for higher education. And then the second document that I gave you came courtesy of Apple Incorporated, and it's their view of a draft design of what a 21st century classroom should look like and what it should include. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Dyson to talk a little bit more about what those components are.
Thank you so much. Ms. Dyson.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Madam Chair, members of the K-12 Education Finance Committee, my name is Pam Dyson. I'm the Director of Technology for the Brainerd School District. And I am going to piggyback off of this diagram that he gave you, which is the diagram for the 21st century classroom. And let me know that this is from Apple's point of view, but all of these things are totally cross-platform. An iPod is just an MP3. All of those things can be done cross-platform. And so one thing on here that may be not as descriptive as it should be is the portable audio. And what that would be, and maybe more defined, would be classroom amplification systems, where the more that students learn or hear, the more that they'll learn. So you can see that this classroom is definitely aligned with the 21st century learners. And all of these kids, having grown up in this digital world that we have right now, when we're looking at the Brainerd School District, I can tell you that only 5% of our classrooms have about half of this amount of technology. So when I was looking at this, I said that 80% of our classrooms are still in the 19th century, 5% are in the 20th century, and 5% are in the 21st century. And John Ward, Representative Ward's classroom was still in the 18th century as of... Since I got a few complaints about that...
Came out of there.
But still, 21st century kids came out. Absolutely. Absolutely. I am now going to turn it over to one of our first grade teachers at the Brainerd School District, Karen Hermanson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hermanson.
Madam Chair, members of the K-12 Education Finance Division, my name is Karen Hermanson. I'm a first grade teacher at Lowell Elementary in Brainerd. I've been a teacher since 1979. The classroom that I walked into when I began as a teacher looked very much like the classroom that I learned in as a learner growing up and going through the Robinson School District. The classroom I have now has 27 children, much more content to cover than I had to cover those first years of teaching, many more cords streamed around the room to hold the equipment, and a lot of kids and furniture that are all fighting for space. I have short learners. I have learners that don't have very many teeth, but they come to me with a lot of hope and a lot of trust. And they're trusting that I'm going to lead them into the 21st century with the tools that they need. They're the digital natives. They've been born into a world with all the technology. I'm the digital immigrant. But I need to take these 21st century learners and make sure that I keep them the producers, the creators of knowledge, and not just the consumers. I need to give them the tools so that they can live in what might be that unpredictable world. They often don't have a lot of sustained attention, and so that's a challenge, and I need to prevent having any breaks in the flow of learning, which often happens when we need to consult the computer, and we need to all get up, go downstairs to the computer lab that's on a different floor. I am one of the fortunate ones. I am one of two of 18 first grade teachers in the district that was able to receive a document camera and a projector in my room this year. It isn't a mounted projector, so that means it does come with a very big cart that we need to maneuver around. But what I see is students and learners that are captivated, they're enthused about what we're doing, it keeps them very engaged. It makes learning a whole different venue in my classroom. It's opened up many different kinds of learning. Now every book that we read is a learning opportunity that everyone can share in. It's like every child is sitting right next to me and I'm holding the book for them because it's large, it's on the whiteboard in front of our room. Everybody can read it together. We can use it as shared reading. We can do things similarly with our writing, with math manipulative. Just this morning before we left to drive down here, we were doing a science lesson. We've been talking about scientific inquiry. The kids have been designing investigations, coming up with their hypotheses, and then going through and coming up with a conclusion. I had a little girl that had a plate that had some milk. She had a food coloring. She wanted to show how soap would cause a reaction with the protein and the fat molecules. One of my other students said, "This would be way cool, Mrs. Hermanson, if we could put that on our Elmo," which is what the kids call the document camera. Another one said, she said she has a meeting today. I don't think we have time to get that out and rearrange the room so that we can use it. So kids are, number one, very well aware that it's a learning tool and that it's helpful to them, but they also realize that we have a ways to go to get where we want to be. We would love to see smart boards, electronic interactive whiteboards in every single one of our classrooms. We could do wonderful things with accountability if we had classroom response systems so that we had a pulse every single second as we're working with kids. Who knows if who doesn't know it? Where do we need to take our learning from here? We could truly follow the learner. And of course, similar to Stillwater, we'd love to have enough laptops so that every child had a laptop or had access to one in the classroom. not a, everybody line up, now we're going downstairs, and we have to reorganize ourselves and reorganize our thoughts and begin again. I, too, speak in strong support of Bill 104. I think we need to take our kids where they need to go, and that's learning in the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Dietrich, you have one more testifier?
Yes.
Jesse Farrell? Okay, Mr. Farrell. I was that's why I wasn't sure how to pronounce it, so I thought I'd let you try.
Thank you.
Mr. Farrell, welcome. If you could restate your name for the case.
Sure. Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the K-12 Education Finance Division, my name is Jesse Farrell, and I'm here on behalf of Hopkins High School, and I teach in the Business and Information Technology Department there. I also coordinate our internship program. So to be respectful of your time, I'll get right to it. What's a book? A book is a really long text message. However, instead of scrolling, you put these things called pages. This may be an extreme case. However, today's student that we see in our classrooms is quite different. Any information that students want is seconds away. We can Google it, we can upload it, we can download it. Not only is it seconds away, but it's in the palm of their hand and it's on them at all times. Yes, technology is amazing, but there's a misperception. I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, but just because your son can tell you played in the World Series in 1942, who won, and the batting percentages of both teams in 15 seconds on a frozen lake in northern Minnesota does not make them a highly employable person. What I see today in my classrooms are students who have the latest technologies at home, but have not been properly trained to apply this to their work environment. Employers are looking for people who can put together spreadsheets, manipulate data, create charts and explain data, and they want it done in the most efficient way, while meeting with people who do not have time to meet. So teach them how to do this, and we do this. We teach them how to use Google Documents so multiple people can collaborate on a project in real time, but be thousands of miles apart from each other, therefore enabling them to compete in a global society. We teach them how to use processing software, graphic design software, engineering software, accounting software. These students are always engaged and sometimes even amazed. Yes, even that kid on the frozen lake in northern Minnesota is still engaged and amazed. But when I say them, I'm actually talking about one out of every three kids at Hopkins. Because at Hopkins, our computer-to-student ratio is 3-1. This is not the norm, and a big reason why we are in Newsweek's top 5% of all public schools. Unfortunately, few, if any, can say that their computer-to-student ratio is better than ours, except perhaps Stillwater. Still, when you break it down, we have 19 labs with approximately 20 to 30 computers in each lab. However, our average class size is at 33 students, especially when you average this in with 245 classes at Hopkins and 2,000 students in the high school, you can see that we have a technology equity issue. We can take care of the time, space, motion, but we can't fix this issue without additional funding. So let's ensure that all students at all schools have this opportunity through this new bill. In my opinion, we've done a really good job of providing the resources, but we lack the funding to properly train all students at all schools. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Demmer. Yep, is it Demmer? Oh, Detmer, I'm sorry. It says Demmer here.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I guess in terms of, of my background.
Representative Detmer, sorry.
Okay. We got Detmer, Demmer, and Demmer. I can't say.
You know, Representative Detmer and never mind. Go ahead.
my experiences with technology in the military, I'm just amazed in the last 10 years. And when I was over in Kuwait, these young people coming out of college or even just out of high school and working with the high technologies that we have now in the military. Sitting behind screens or sitting on multi-million-dollar piece of equipment, being able to see things out in the field and just miles away from what the action is really going on, I was just impressed. And you don't have to convince me of the importance of technology. My question is, though, the way we're sitting now economically, the bill states that the school district that receive school endowment fund revenue under this section can only apply to those certain areas, which is technology. What if a school district says, we want to keep our teachers in the classroom, and can they get a waiver to use these funds for keeping teachers in the classroom? That's my question.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The bill does not say that right now, and I think it is a good place to start, that we must use the funds for technology. If this would continue on down the process, I think that option would be talked about. If there is a school district that does not feel like they have any need for technology, a partial need of the $36 or whatever it is that at the time that this gets implemented, that they would be able to have some sort of option of saying, you know, this is not the highest priority at this point.
May I follow up?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Now, we have cases now where school districts do come in and ask request for funds to be transferred from one account to the other. Would this still apply for this type of fund then?
Representative
Dietrich?
I would like to ask Tim Strom to address that, as far as if this would be a new categorical, or if this would probably go into one of the existing, and would it require a state approval to move funds?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, the way the bill is currently drafted, that money needs to be reserved for those purposes. The language in the bill essentially says it must only use that revenue, so the school district, from an accounting matter, wouldn't set up a separate reserve account, but they wouldn't be able to use the funds for another purpose without legislative approval.
Okay. So, Representative Dietrich, you know, I think we're thinking right now of districts that just plain don't have enough money for technology, and Representative Detmer raises a good point. What if they somehow finally get up there, then what? And so that might be something to consider adding to the language as you go along. So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to see that in the language. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Point well taken. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, and perhaps this is for Mr. Strom, are districts at this point required to develop and report to the department a technology plan? Anything of the sort there?
Mr. Strom.
Yeah, Madam Chair, perhaps you'd like the district person to speak to this and they can tell you what's in their technology plan.
Good transfer.
Okay. Mr. Plant, would you like to answer that?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, for now over a decade on a 3 to 4 year cycle as part of the federal funds we received for discounting on this program called E-Rate, that is additional money that comes into school districts to reduce telecommunications costs. There has been a requirement to have a Department of Education state approved plan, and so districts do create those plans and they are evaluated, approved by the State Department, and then periodically updated. It's on a 4 year replacement cycle now.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was not in the last session, Representative Dietrich, so I know that in reading the summary that there were some, that this bill was presented last year and was not accepted. Could you explain to me if we've overcome the hurdles from last year, and have you addressed the problems from last year?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't necessarily know that it was the bill, and that there were, that those were the issues. I think there were some philosophical differences with the Senate. The Senate did not want to dedicate the money to technology. They just thought that we would have, because you have to understand, we were doing two things. We were taking away the subtraction for the school trust lands, which was one bill, and then another bill was dedicating it to technology. And so, I think that they just got focused on the fact that if we eliminated the subtraction and this money truly did go as additional funding to the school districts, that was enough and that we shouldn't take the extra step. So, Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we were able to put in the amendment or exclusion that Representative Detmer suggested, do you think that would make it more palatable to the Senate this year?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. And you have to understand, and I was in some of those hearings, and I just want to make sure that I supply this footnote. The people that felt like that was from some of the more wealthy school districts that have been able to bond quite heavily for their technology needs. And so they that felt like maybe they were at capacity of where they wanted to be with technology. And so I do think that there would be a need to have some sort of language that allowed people to use the money for something else. But at this point, I would like to have this a discussion about technology.
And it was the feeling of the House that if the money were dedicated to something, not just generally going to schools, but dedicated to something, then there would be more paying attention of it and how much of the money went to the DNR versus how much money went to school districts. It would be more concretely looked at is what we were thinking of in the House. Representative Dietrich.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you for reminding me of that, too. You know, when we started talking about this bill, when Representative Greiling asked me to chair this work group, people were really did not have any understanding of the school trust fund money and that it was supposed to be an additional money to the districts, and it wasn't. It was being subtracted out of the general fund, and so we needed to take that step. But obviously, legislative auditors in previous years have recommended to take that money and dedicate it to something very hands-on, something you can see, something you can feel, something you can touch, because then that would add a level of accountability and raise the level of concern about the school trust lands and how much money were we generating off of those school trust lands and how well was the money being invested. And that would just raise the level of accountability from the whole public and all the school districts for that school trust land money.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich.
Yeah. And we have our resident ranger on this committee, Representative Ansel, who watches out for what is happening, because we do need the development of these lands. And if we didn't have forestry management or mineral investigation, then there wouldn't be any income from the land. So it does clearly need to be done. The DNR is stuck when their budget gets cut, and so that's why we ended up with this very imperfect solution. And the thought has always been education has plenty of money, so who cares if we take a little here and a little there. Well, now education hasn't kept up with inflation for the last dozen years. We have all these property tax increases and levy referendums, and we need our money back. We used to have this constitutionally dedicated for over 100 years, and as for myself, I would fight with Representative Ansel to get the money for the DNR as well, and that's our conundrum this year. And Representative Virginia, if someone gave her, she said to Representative Dietrich today, I think, a stable source of funding, we could have our money back, but she needs the money too. And so, you know, that's kind of where we are. Now we do have a question from Representative Demmer, and then Representative Dietrich, I think we'll hear from Mr. Bartholomew quickly, because we need to get on to your other bill. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. You know, I was thinking about this before, and you brought up a good point, Representative Dietrich. But a lot of times I think schools are using override levies and that sort of thing for using technology. Technology is an ongoing need because it changes constantly, and the computers wear out. And so I think as we look at an ongoing stream of revenues, which this is, you know, it makes a lot of sense, you know, to have this going toward that dedicated use. I personally am one that likes the school district to have more discretion over what they do with their dollars and not categorize things. I think in this particular case, because this is capital need and because oftentimes school districts have to go for levy override for an investment in stuff that lasts theoretically 2 or 3 years, again, 0.5 or 6 years, they have to go back to another bond referendum to do it again. And that's very choppy and very difficult. And I think what we find school districts, quite frankly, that still have Apple IIe's out there because they can't replace them. I think a steady source of revenue for something like this for a categorical use in this case makes some sense. I had ambivalence, Representative Dietrich. You know, I don't know if we talked about this. I did sign on this particular one, but I think it makes some sense.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartholomew. Welcome, and please state your name for the tape, Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership.
And I just wanted to, you've heard a lot of the great arguments and ideas for technology use in the classroom from the previous testifiers, so I'll just be very quick. What I'm handing around is kind of a summary. Quest provides $100,000 every year to recognize teachers and technology in the classroom as the program. And teachers from around the state and their schools submit grant applications talking about innovative ideas for using technology to teach their kids. And last year, 15 teachers were recognized with these grants of anywhere between $3,000 to $7,500. And I guess the purpose for doing this is just to give you a sense. These grants go around the state, metro, greater Minnesota, large schools, small schools, but also schools that have tremendous technology resources. Rochester talks about using a planetarium and a lot of related technological equipment. Yet there are also other schools in, across the state that are really building up from ground zero. But the teachers in the schools have some terrific ideas. This has been a wonderful experience for us just to see where teachers want to go and the planning that they put forward. And I guess it's just a reinforcement that Representative Dietrich's legislation could be a reinforcement to this on an ongoing basis.
Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Dietrich. We will lay over House File 104 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And if you would like to move your second bill.
Yes, I would, Madam Speaker.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Dietrich, now I'm going to be really confused. Representative Detmer is moved. Representative Detmer?
I'm writing up an amendment.
Oh, to do it right now?
Yes.
For 104. Well, let me ask Mr. Strom. Is it going to be ready in 30 seconds, or should we? It is. Well, then let's just wait. Yeah, if I don't interrupt him, Mr. Crow says he'll be done. We'll take House File 104 off the table while Mr. Strom is working. And to kill time, we have a question from Representative Ansel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask the previous testifier if the Minnesota Business Partnership supports this legislation.
Mr. Bartholomew.
Madam Chair, members, Representative Ansel, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Speaker, what we're looking at here, line 1.7 would be paragraph A, then we'd drop down to past 115, 116, then there'd be a paragraph B. And paragraph B would read, a school board that adopt a resolution certifying that its technology needs are met, may use its school endowment revenues for any general fund purpose.
Thank you. Representative Detmer has moved this amendment. I'm going to have Mr. Strom repeat it just so we all have it straight. And before he does that, members, I want to make clear that the reason we're taking an amendment that we did not have ahead of time, because we really want our amendments to be out there 24 hours ahead, is because I'm sensing that everyone is fine with it. The author is fine with it, and I think she thinks it improves the bill. And so if it was an amendment that was not generally accepted by the committee, non-controversial and not accepted by the author, then we would save it for the markup of the bill. But this one, I think, gets in under all the qualifications. So, Mr. Strom, if you could repeat it before we vote.
Madam Chair, members, on line 1.7, before insert paragraph A. Madam Chair, members, line after line 116, insert paragraph B. A school board that adopts a resolution certifying that its technology needs are met may use its school endowment revenue for any general fund purpose.
Any questions? Justin Dietrich, that needs your approval.
Yes.
All
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
I really kind of hate to do this, but I would like to pose the question to the author. There is no standard in Representative Detmer's amendment beyond the school board deciding that they've got enough money in technology. And I agree with the chair that I think there's a consensus around the room that we'd like to have a waterfall here where the technology gets the first grab, but not a fence that holds it in.
Representative Dabney, I'm going to stop you right there, okay. And we won't accept the amendment then, because we need to hear the other bill, and Representative Detmer and Dabney and Dietrich can work on it before we mark up our bill at the end of session. So thank you for bringing up your concerns before the vote instead of afterwards.
I didn't know she was going
to... Madam Chair, I would just like to add, too, is that that is the Senate position, and so if this does go to conference committee, I think that our bill is a good House position. And then we can compromise with the Senate.
Very good. So we will lay over House Bill 104 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And now, Representative Dietrich, if you could move your second bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 780 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus education bill.
Representative Dietrich moves House File 780. Please proceed.
Okay, Madam Chair, before I get into the content of the bill, I would like to focus your attention on the flowchart that you have in your packet. I think it is, I'm going to go through it very quickly, but it's really important to have a basic understanding of how the permanent school trust lands work. If you'll look at the top of this flowchart, you see permanent school trust lands. If you look at this map over here, they are highlighted in color. That map, obviously, as we've been reminded, is in the northeast section of the state. 90% of the school trust lands are in that northeast section of the state, and they equal 2.5 acres and plus 1 million acres in mineral rights. Those permanent school trust lands, they generate revenue, and that revenue, if it's leases and a few other types of revenue, that money goes right into the permanent school trust fund's lands, and you see that arrow on the far right. Then you look in the middle, and you see when we get to mining, the DNR has the we have in statute allowed the DNR to subtract mining expenses before that money gets to the permanent school trust lands fund. Then if you go to the next arrow, that is represents forestry. We have also statutorily allowed the DNR to subtract their forestry expenses before that money that's generated from the forest lands goes into the permanent school trust fund. If you go down to the rectangle below, the permanent school trust fund rectangle, that is referred to as the corpus fund. That money is invested and is managed by the State Board of Investment. That investment income, if you follow the arrows, in other words, the interest and dividends, goes directly to the school district. Now, if you look a little bit to the right, you will see you'll see the word general fund subtraction, and you see that scissors there. That scissors is what we did last year. We cut off that piece of the flowchart. That money is no longer subtracted from the general fund. It stays within the school district and is considered and will be considered. I need to clarify that. Next year, as of next year, it will be considered additional money to the schools. And if you have any further questions about that, we can talk about that, but we had better get to the testimony on the bill. And I am going to just make a few points, and hopefully my testifier, Ms. Rob Kelleher, will also make some of the points that I was going to in the interest of time. Okay, in general, well, I guess I should speak to the bill, shouldn't I? House File 780, it removes those management costs of those two rectangles that I showed you for mining and forestry. The House File 780 removes those management costs for minerals and forest proceeds that would be paid into the permanent school trust fund, and it appropriates the money for those expenses now from the general fund. So all of those management activities would now be taken out of the general fund. And somebody might, some people might ask why. And I need to say that in general, I believe that it is. I strongly believe, I can't underestimate this enough, I strongly believe that it is the responsibility of the state to pay those expenses in administering and managing the school trust land. And this bill reflects that belief. And first and foremost, or why do I believe that? First and foremost, I believe it is the intent of the Minnesota Constitution that all the income generated from the permanent school trust lands be deposited into the permanent school trust fund. There should not be those two rectangles there on that school trust.
So you know, we've got 3 minutes left for you and Ms. Kelleher.
Oh, I better hurry. I will. In fact, the Minnesota Constitution, if you're doubting me, reads, all the funds arising from the sale or other disposition of the lands or income accruing in any way before the sale or disposition thereof shall be credited to the permanent school fund. And then secondly, quick version, I think that it is very difficult to assess the DNR activity on school trust lands and to monitor and decide whether it is DNR expenses or where they are school trust land expenses. And I think that line is very blurred, and we can have a more in-depth talk about that at another time. And at this point, I am going to
Ms. Kelleher.
Allow Ms. Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Representative Dietrich. Thank you so much for carrying this bill. We're here supporting this bill today because we believe these costs associated with school trust fund lands are, in fact, state responsibilities. I'm going to refer you to our own statute code, 89.039, which is forest management. It talks about what the goals of the forest management is across the state of Minnesota. And as you look at those maps, you don't see the school trust fund lands just in one parcel. We actually had difficulty putting this together this morning for the fact that they're in 40-acre parcels, and they're intermixed with all the others. So if you turn to page 15 that the DNR gave you, it lists the types of costs they're allowed to bill back against the trust fund lands. Is it 18? No, it's, yes, page 18. And I suggest to you that some of those costs really shouldn't be borne by the trust fund lands and really are a state responsibility, fire suppression being one of them. Certainly, Senator Brock raised some good questions on the other body about how these costs were done. The fire started on federal land, went to state land. The DNR billed back the federal government. And it wasn't clear whether those federal funds were reimbursed to the school trust fund lands or not. Those kinds of items, as Representative Dietrich alluded to, make us wonder if this is really the best way. It'd be better if the state approached that issue. And also, if you turn to page 15, they do the land sales revenue. If you look for 2008, 21 parcels were offered. Only four were sold for 84 acres for $75,000. And it just once again wonders if, you know, the trust fund lands are really better being managed by the state than in our economic. I wouldn't consider that an economic success or efficiency by any means. So this bill would let you go forward on that. The last piece of information I'd like you to review, and we don't have time today, is the internal audit done by the legislative auditor of the Game and Fish Fund. In that, finding 3 in particular says that the Department of Natural Resources does not effectively monitor payroll allocations to the Game and Fish Fund. And I would suggest, they are, as they say in here, that that affects all departments because they can all establish how they want to bill costs. And as such, they usually take a certain amount of time, decide how much time they spend doing school trust fund land activities, and then spread that out over a year. And that's just plain not effective for us folks, and I think we just need a new path, and this bill takes us there.
Thank you very much. And just to clarify, members, we'll now lay the bill over. It will not be for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. We'll just lay over House File 780 because it may need to go to Environment and Natural Resources. So thank you very much, Representative Dietrich and Schwab, and the meeting is adjourned.